Hello, you're listening to the This Is The Way Phase 4 podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Laskauser. Today's discussion is about the first movie released in theaters by Disney and Marvel Studios after COVID shut down the world in 2020. When it debuted in theaters, you could also catch it on Disney Plus for a time if you paid an additional premium on top of your subscription. That was the model that started with Mulan, except that movie never had a theatrical release. On October 6th, 2021, long after Black Widow left its original run in theaters, the premium charge was dropped, and the movie is now available to all Disney Plus subscribers. Black Widow stars Scarlett Johansson, and you're most likely aware of what happened during Avengers Endgame. Yeah, we're not giving you a spoiler alert here. If you haven't seen that movie, and if you haven't seen this movie, why are you listening to a podcast discussion about this movie? There's a post-credit scene with a visit to Romanoff's cenotaph. This is a telling period of time for Natasha that starts by showing a brief moment of her youth in the United States as part of a cover family for Russian spies. It blows through her training in the Red Room as an assassin in an opening title scene montage. It references her defection to S.H.I.E.L.D. through the attempted assassination of the room's founder and overseer, and it takes place mostly in between the aftermath of the Sokovia Accords and before she breaks her Avengers pals out of the raft floating prison. Now, again, if you haven't seen this movie, why are you listening to a podcast discussion about it? Please consider this your final warning.
You remember when I told you that one day we would have that big adventure? And today's the day.
Please visit our social media to become part of this podcast and have your voice heard and enter one of our giveaways. Now, our giveaway for October was rolled over into our November giveaway that's going to be announced in December. So you still have time. Go listen to our past podcast, starting with the What If series. And you can also listen to our Spider-Man No Way Home trailer reaction. And then you can send us the pertinent information to our email address after you've visited our Twitter and done some things there. But our email address is thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. Our Twitter and our Instagram page are @thewayphase4. And you can visit us on facebook.com/thewayphase4. I'm This Is The Way Phase 4's Steve Laskauser, and I'd like to tell you about cufflinks.com. You've looked all over the multiverse for a gift that will make that Marvel fan in your life look snappier than Thanos. You're looking in the wrong place. It's not in Odin's vault. The collector doesn't have what you need. Visit cufflinks.com. There you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, of course, but you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and much, much more. The Marvel offerings will amaze you. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful accessories or wear something so subtle, even Hawkeye would have to look twice to notice. You don't have to have a need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you just might find yourself considering a bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you see those Thanos Infinity Gauntlets or Captain America shields. There's more than Marvel, too. DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, and collegiate offerings, and of course, Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars themed podcast, we can offer you 15% off your purchase when you enter THEWAY15 in the coupon code box at checkout. Do you need something to dazzle a Shostakov, Vostokov, Romanov, or Belova? Do you need another high-quality accessory to take the focus off your 10 rings of power? Do you want to look marvelous while wearing Marvel? Well, cufflinks.com has you covered no matter which universe you call home. Check out cufflinks.com today.
All right, let's go.
Let's talk about this movie, shall we? The movie opens in 1995 in Ohio. We see a young Natasha with a girl who we are led to believe is her younger sister. When they get to their home, their mother is making dinner, and then their father gets home. Just from the trailers alone, I knew that none of them were actually related, but until you see what takes place in the movie, you can't really be certain. Alexei Shostakov stole something from the lab he worked at, burned it to the ground, and now they must all escape. They drive to an airfield and hop onto a plane. Alexei doing so quite literally, but we do see that he's also got super strength. They are Russian spies, and they fly their small plane to Cuba with Melina being severely hurt. And then some really horrible stuff happens. We see Natasha has already been familiarized with the Red Room, which trains young girls to be assassins and steals their childhood, their womanhood, their lives. We know this because of how much she doesn't want to go back.
Don't touch her! I will kill you all! Я буду стрелять!
It's a horror that Natasha will go back, and Yelena and her are going to be put through the Red Room and then separated from Alexei and Melina Vostokov, who were posing as their mother and father, the only motherly and fatherly influence either girl ever really knew. Now, having two young girls as I do, the Red Room probably plays a little bit more scary to me than others. Because of the way human trafficking is so prevalent nowadays, it's a nightmare to think that these young children are being treated this way and how they'll never know that parental love that is so important to development. The movie then shifts to 2016 with Thunderbolt Ross on Natasha's trail after she refused to sign on to the Sokovia Accords. She escapes, and I think it's because he thought she was in one place and she's actually in another. Maybe this is to set up for us another plot point later. And it ends up feeling to me like two cold opens put together. And I think it might have worked better if the flashback part had been nested inside her escape. You know, Thunderbolt Ross trying to keep her talking on the phone while they close in on her. But then something he says sparks a flashback. Maybe he talks about her childhood or her de facto parents, Alexei and Melina. And then as the flashback wraps up, we see, oh, he thinks he's right outside the door where Natasha is, but she's not there. She's on the boat. I think it might have worked a little bit better that way. Instead, it feels like start, stop again. We're then taken to Morocco, where we see Yelena in action for the first time. She, too, made it through the Red Room training, and she's after a target. And very early in the film, plot points are going to be revealed. They're after a woman named Oksana, carrying a package that turns out to be some kind of nerve agent that releases a widow from their brainwashed or conditioned, or controlled state, whatever it is. It's a sparkly red powder, or gas maybe. And after she was stabbed by the controlled Yelena, her parting shot is to spray her in the face with some of it. And that releases Yelena from the control of General Dreykov. She immediately cuts a tracker out of her leg, which gave me pause as to how she'd even know that it was there. You know, even if the powder or gas worked as it should, I don't know how she would know or remember being implanted with one. Now she is on the run, and one of the other widows requests permission for the Taskmaster Protocol. And we see a masked, helmeted, hooded figure watching drone footage of Clint Barton firing arrows at Black Panther at close range. And then a widow comes up, unhoods the figure. It looks like she puts a thumb drive into the back of the masked helmet and then traces a smile on the mask with her fingers.
Smile.
Kind of mysterious and creepy at the same time. In Norway, a secret contact has a safe house for Natasha, and I got an impression that this guy was going to betray her and that she'd be on the run again, but rather than go for that trope, the movie, I think, wisely opts for something else. I don't know the significance of Moonraker. Maybe it's got something to do with Drax wanting to create a master race or the nerve gas that he used in the film. Or maybe it's just something we'd expect Natasha to get a kick out of. Maybe there's a line in some movie about how she liked James Bond. I don't remember that if that's the case. Well, during the movie, it appears that the generator runs out of fuel or just stops working. But the movie doesn't cut off. And I think we see her watching it on her computer. So it's downloaded on her laptop. So she's a fan of this movie. She heads into town, and in the back of her car, she's got mail that she plans on tossing in the trash eventually, but it happens to contain a package intended for her from Yelena. She doesn't know that yet. On the drive, Taskmaster attacks, and initially, Natasha thinks that it's Ross that's tracking her down. And then when the fighting stops, when they're face-to-face, she realizes the hunter is hunting something else. She gets beaten back by the Taskmaster, but she uses a grappling device, and it saves the day. It lets her peek inside for a brief moment into that package before she gets knocked off the bridge, but not before she was able to get the vials out and into her jacket. Didn't seem like she had a lot of time, but okay. Romanoff floats downstream, and I think this is another weak point in the plot for me, though. The Taskmaster, Dracov, the Red Room, Black Widows, all of them surely have access to drones. We just saw them using one, right, to show footage of the fight between Barton and the Black Panther. So why not send up one at that moment? Even if you don't have one, okay, in that car that the Taskmaster drove. With all the telemetry that we see on the visor of the Taskmaster, none of that provides for infrared heat tracking. Not only that, the Black Widow program knows she's in that area, but is the Taskmaster out alone, sent out for her by himself or herself? And in such a remote place with so little resources available to Natasha, why not simply watch the roads and ferries for her or someone remotely like her, so that she doesn't get away? How was she able to get to and into Budapest at all? She takes trains, right? She has her red hair still. She's out in the middle of a group of people walking, despite having had that box of blonde at her camper that, yes, we don't see her go back to the camper, but it has her laptop and probably something else valuable only to her. But she doesn't go back there, I think. She makes it to Budapest, to the safe house. And when she does, she knows that Yelena is inside. She saw a picture of them as children. How Yelena had that picture, I don't know either. They have a fight. Eventually, Natasha concedes in truth because she takes a chance that the vials sent to her were for a legit reason. And also perhaps because Yelena was at one time her quote-unquote sister. Yelena has a few pointed questions, and we find out had this come before the events of Civil War, Natasha might have been able to use some of her friends to help deduce the formula, with Banner or Tony Stark. They might have helped reproduce it. The Avengers could have even stepped in and helped free, the Red Room girls. Coming as it does, though, in the middle of the hunt for half of the Avengers, she's left to track things down on her own. We hear that the Budapest operation with her and Clint Barton was actually her final step in her defection to S.H.I.E.L.D.
Dracov's dead. It took almost destroying the entire city just to get to him. We rigged bombs.
Who's we?
Clint Barton. Killing Dracov was the final step in my defection to S.H.I.E.L.D.
Simple as that?
Yeah, sure, simple. That's what I'd call imploding a 5-story building and then shooting it out with the Hungarian Special Forces. Took 10 days in hiding before we could even get out of Budapest.
And you checked the body? Confirmed the kill?
There was no body left to check.
You're forgetting Dracov's daughter.
They're found by the widows and escape the safe house, but are chased, and there's a scene with a widow falling and hurting herself badly. Natasha falls after not making it through the same window, but she's okay, and Yelena, from the same falling smokestack, is up in a stairwell. But when Natasha approaches the downed widow to offer help, she sees firsthand that Dracov is not dead because he orders the widow to terminate herself.
I don't want to do this.
What are you doing?
He's making...
Then it's the Taskmaster giving chase, and they end up in a subway but leave a blood trail into a hole while hiding out in an air duct above. It's here when we get a flashback of the lengths Natasha went to kill Dracov. She sacrificed his innocent daughter as collateral damage to be sure that Dracov was in the building and in his office. They leave the subway at some point, head to a shop to buy some food and supplies, I guess. And there is a great piece of meta humor here performed by Florence Pugh, the actor for Yelena Belova.
Why do you guys do that thing?
Do what?
The thing you do when you're fighting. And the, this thing that you do when you whip your hair when you're fighting with the arm and the hair and you do like a fighting pose. It's a fighting pose. You're a total poser.
I'm not a poser.
She also has another funny exchange talking about her first ever purchase with her own free will, being a cargo jacket with a lot of pockets. And it seems realistic to me. You know, just one of those things that somebody would do if that was the first time that they could exercise their own will. So they need to get to the Red Room. You know, they need a way. They figure that they're going to go to Dracov's one-time right-hand man, or so they think. They're going to break Dad out of prison with a helicopter. Once again, they trust the Norway contact to come through, or Natasha does, and he does. He's got a helicopter and some weapons. And then we see Shostakov, the Red Guardian, arm wrestling and telling tall tales of himself and Captain America while he's getting a tattoo in prison. I'm left to assume that, like we found out in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that there were actually many soldiers that were given some form of super serum. Now, only some of them survived, and he says at some point that he's the only Russian one. And while they may have been sent on missions, surviving probably meant being put in prison afterward. In fact, one of the arm wrestlers, a big guy he calls Ursa, which means bear, questions Alexei because he believes, like the rest of the world, Captain America was frozen in ice well into the 2000s, couldn't have been around in 1983 or 1984 like Alexei claims. So that guy gets beaten and his wrist broken through the use of CGI, and then Alexei is summoned for mail call. The guards give him some of his mail. They clearly opened it, you know, checked it out. But he pulls the cord on the doll and the head pops off, reveals an earpiece, and this guy's ready to go. I mean, he puts it in and then immediately Natasha is giving him instructions and they begin the breakout. In the process, Yelena is flying the helicopter, but apparently she can put it into some kind of hover mode, you know, at least long enough to get an RPG and blow up a machine gun nest in a tower. And this is while the helicopter's just being made into Swiss cheese with bullets from everywhere. Well, that machine gun nest that explodes starts an avalanche that sets a ticking clock for us and for Alexei's breakout. And, you know, Natasha needs rescuing now, too. She put herself down into the fight. They succeed. You know they have to, because the movie isn't over. It's a great action set piece. And then we get some reminiscing in the helicopter. First, Alexei is insensitive. He brings up the time of the month for Yelena, which is maybe not the most woke joke you can make, right? But she smacks him, and then she immediately reminds him, you know, they don't get periods because he abandoned them to the Red Room, and they don't let him off the hook either, describing for him and for us the brutality of what happens to them. You know, their insides are basically taken out. Their reproduction is cut off. They let him know he's there because they want to know where the Red Room is, and he says, I don't know, and he disparages his time in Ohio just moments after saying how proud he is of the girls that they rescued him. And he tells them of the story of the falling out between him and Dracov, and it's more humorous than anything. But then he brings up Melina, who they assumed was dead.
Wait, Mom Melina?
We thought she was dead.
Bah, you cannot kill a fox that swift.
Ew.
What?
There's an insinuation that Alexei kind of has a thing for Melina, but like two real daughters, Yelena and Natasha express a little disgust at the thought of their mom and dad having a relationship. But he explains, she was the scientist and strategist, and he was the muscle. Somehow, though, he still knows where she is, unless he just assumes that she's in the last place that he heard about. It's somewhere outside St. Petersburg, Russia, not Florida. Also, Alexei, the Red Guardian, uses the non-Soviet name of the place. He says St. Petersburg, not Leningrad, which maybe was a mistake in the script, or maybe they just don't care. It is not a big deal. On the walk to Vostokov, Alexei praises them for their successes since he left, something for which they have held a grudge.
You both have killed so many people. Your ledgers must be dripping, just gushing red. I couldn't be more proud of you.
Melina seems shocked to see them, and she's working with pigs, apparently. Now, I got the impression that it's her work that was a breakthrough for Dracov, because she demonstrates with a touchpad that she can command one of her pigs to stop breathing. Something, you know, you can only do for so long before your brain steps in and forces you to gasp for air. So they have a meal together, and they're exhibiting a familiar family dynamic, and they fall back into it after how many years? Melina Vostokov casually mentions that their job was infiltrating a lab run by S.H.I.E.L.D., which she says was actually Hydra at the time, doing experimentation by dissecting and deconstructing the human brain in conjunction with the Winter Soldier program to build a model of the basal ganglia, the center of cognition.
The medulla oblongata.
Mama?
The medulla oblongata.
Okay, wrong movie.
Something wrong with his medulla oblongata.
Melina strongly implies she doesn't know what's going on, feigns ignorance. Even Alexei calls her out on it. But in the end, Natasha calls Dad an idiot and Mom a coward. They have a family fight where Natasha's Maz, the older sister, saying it wasn't real, and Yelena's upset because to her, younger by a few years, she desperately wanted it to be real. And she looks to Natasha as a legitimate older sister, torn apart in their formative years. In fact, some great acting, I thought, by Pew here, as she lets them know she's mad, because she believed it to be real. She feels the shame and the shock of finding out that the best parts of your entire life were fake. She even calls Melina her real mom. For a woman who's been through the Red Room, and to have that taken from her, that ability taken from her, it must have been a dagger, right? So Yelena storms off, mad at everyone at the table. Melina, once again, pretending to be innocent. Natasha, having gotten out of the system, coming to a place of regret and self-shame in herself. That's going to follow her all the way to Vormir. Alexei, playing dad here, he decides he's going to go talk to her, to Yelena. And then Natasha and Melina have a heart-to-heart. Romanoff finds out her parents basically sold her, but maybe her mother didn't really want to do that because her mom asked way too many questions, threatened the secret of the Red Room, so she was killed on Dreykov's orders. Natasha finds a photo album that she thought to be lost when they abandoned their house in Ohio, but Melina did save it. Melina tries to pretend that she's too far gone, having been through the Red Room several times before Natasha was even born, but something's working on her, right? She says she's a mouse born in a cage, but Natasha disputes that that's the end for her. Melina wonders how she was able to keep her heart through the Red Room with all the pain that she's suffered. And Natasha's reply to her seems to be the final crack in the wall for Melina.
Pain only makes us stronger. Didn't you tell us that?
It's too late, though. Vostokov reveals she already alerted the Red Room, and it cuts away to Yelena. Alexei's trying to comfort her, but she's heard him talk about how it was a chore to take care of them in Ohio. I don't think he really means that, though. No, he's leaving in his Crimson Dynamo costume.
It's the Red Guardian.
But he starts singing Yelena's favorite song as a child, American Pie by Don McLean, and she joins in. She seems at least touched that he remembered it right before a team comes to collect them. We see Red Guardian taken down by a dozen or so Trank darts. Yelena goes to find Natasha, who's apparently unconscious on the pantry floor, and Melina appears in the doorway and knocks out Yelena. The Taskmaster arrives, and Melina says they shouldn't keep him waiting. Then we see that the Red Room is now a floating base above Russia, somewhere. It's made clear that Alexei is once again a prisoner, as is Natasha, and Yelena is going to have her brain removed while she's still awake. Not a very cool way to die. During the chat between Dreykov and Melina, we see him get very close to her, and at some point in his conversation, he takes a mask off who we thought was Melina. But we've seen that mask a couple of times before. Melina is actually Natasha, having switched out spots so she could get close to Dreykov. She learns that his little girl did not die, but she was maimed enough for him to use his own daughter as an experiment. And I guess her name is Antonia, and she is the Taskmaster. Melina reveals herself to Alexei in a prison cell, and they help Yelena escape through an earpiece, and Dreykov reveals his true plans to Natasha, which now I think maybe that's why we had the Bond movie earlier. You know, it would have been too on the nose if we had a scene of the villain revealing his plans to Bond. Instead, we get a little bit more subtle nod, and Dreykov shows how he controls the Black Widows with his ring, where he keeps his data. But unfortunately, Natasha can't beat the pheromonal lock brainwashed into her until she breaks her own nose completely so that she can harm Dreykov. But by the time she does, he's called the Widows to his side. Natasha has beaten some stiff odds before, but the Widows are too much. They subdue her, they take turns beating her, until Yelena detonates some of the vials of antidotal powder, gas, whatever it is, above them all, because they're gathered in a circle around her, and then they snap to. Melina is busy taking down the Red Room, as in literally taking it down from the sky, and as the base starts to fall apart, the various groups start falling to the ground with the ship. There's wreckage in the skies, planes are difficult to make a takeoff, and escape is very difficult. And finally, we see Dracov does meet his end in a plane full of his henchmen. Natasha saves Yelena by bringing them a parachute, but Taskmaster is closing in. And Antonia had survived the base destruction. She was trapped in a cell, but Natasha let her out. So they fall together now. A chute deploys in Taskmaster's suit, and they have a fight at the ground, and it appears that Antonia might ultimately win. But Romanoff has one more vial, I guess, and upon using it on the maskless Antonia, it frees her from brainwashing by her father. She even seems relieved that he is gone. This, though, is where you have to have bought into the whole movie so far in order to forgive the conveniences, because we get another family reunion, but Natasha thinks they should immediately split up and leaves Yelena and Melina to replicate the formula and free sleeper widows left around the world by Dracov. That's okay. Except the newly freed widows from the Red Room arrive to help Yelena. So why couldn't they all leave the area together then, in that plane? You're telling me four more people in the plane was too much? On top of that, it appears Natasha's just going to sit and wait in the wreckage. Except unlike the time in the beginning of the movie where Ross only thought she was in the building he was heading into, Romanoff is out there, in the middle of the wreckage. On top of all that, Ross is actually in the vehicle caravan coming to arrest her. How? How is he already in the area? Even if the falling apart of the base had been over a city instead of rural Russia, how is he there? Yes, I am aware that she said she was going to activate her tracker once she got inside, but that is not enough time. And if he's there, why not even more cars? Why not even more people if you're expecting Romanoff to survive? Because why not also expect multiple Black Widows to survive? Unless you had a feed in the building and saw what happened to them, freeing them from their, you know, brainwashing, you'd have to assume that they would immediately be hostile to any U.S. infiltration. Now, I don't need my movies to make complete sense. I just need less reasons to remind myself that it doesn't make sense, and the less of them thrown together in the same place, the better. So Ross shows up with like 10 black cars and with a first shot, and there's some Humvees there with weapons on them, but that number grows to about 15 when it rounds a corner. Instead, they could have just come down the embankment right at her, but somehow they go take this big circuitous route. I don't know if that's when she escapes. Somehow she does, though. 2 weeks later, again, she meets her private contractor contact, who is again sleeping, but this time he's got a Quinjet for her. She remarks she's got to go break some family out of prison and heads to do just that.
It's funny, my whole life I didn't think I had any family. Turns out I got two. So, one of them's a bit of a mess right now. I'm gonna go break a few of them out of prison. See if I can't help patch things up.
That family, of course, being the Avengers. And there is a post-credit scene, no mid-credit one. It's Yelena visiting a tree not unlike the one described by Dracov or Melina to Natasha as the one where Dracov buried her mother. But this seems to be a wooded place where maybe spies bury spies or something. A secret spot for cenotaphs. Those are gravestones without bodies, basically. You know, Natasha's body is on Vormir, supposedly. So this is present day. We see that somehow Yelena knows Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, the woman who approached John Walker in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series. She's there to tip off Yelena so that she will head after Clint Barton. For one reason or another, Valentina...
You know, it's hard, but I don't like to repeat myself, so you can just call me Val, but don't call me Val.
Wants Clint dead, and could that be a lead in somehow to the series that starts this week on Disney Plus? You know, Hawkeye?
Should we be worried?
No, it's nothing. I'll be home for Christmas. I promise.
I liked the movie. I thought it was fun, but it doesn't make much sense. The good thing about most Marvel movies, though, is I can overlook a lot of that. And this movie has a lot to overlook, but if it's entertaining, doesn't shove political messaging down my throat, those things are a lot more forgivable. Disney and Marvel can get away with a ton of bad decisions if it's not preaching to us. And I think the theme of a found family coming together for one or another reasons in this movie is something that almost everyone can get behind. There's nothing in here that I can recall which caused me to have a crisis of conscience or something, made me look past sincerely held convictions in my beliefs, or even just political differences. The action was good. The writing wasn't awful. There were just the usual plot holes for convenience sake, or maybe because it was running 2 hours long as it was. I think filling those plot holes becomes even more forgivable if you're doing that later on, you know, in the service of another project story in another movie, another TV show. I think if you went back and watched a lot of the Marvel movies in Phase 1, perhaps, maybe we would feel like those holes needed filling then, but if you're patient, eventually some of them were. At this point, though, we're talking about a movie that's already set in the past, 2016. It's a little less likely that Marvel's going to care about it, you know, especially with the legal trouble between Scarlett Johansson and Disney over how the movie was released. I think that's odd, considering it had been a theatrical release only. Far fewer people would have seen the movie if that was the case, because of political machinations with masks and vaccination status and heavily blue, heavily populated cities. Since it was a settlement, we may never hear the real details of what went on, but I don't know if Natasha needs to come back now. Yelena seems to be set up for us as taking her place as the Black Widow.
Yeah, great plan. I love the part where I almost bled to death.
What do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter or Instagram at @thewayphase4 and on Facebook at @thewayphase4. Please also look into our giveaway, which is continuing from October into November and even December, and we'll have an announcement on that some point in December, maybe with a movie review or possibly the end of the Hawkeye series that's going to start this week. Thanks for joining us today for This Is The Way Phase 4's look at the summer 2021 movie Black Widow, streaming now on Disney Plus for free to all subscribers with that paid subscription, of course.
Hey, big guy. Sun's getting real low.
I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.